Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Crypto Market Rundown, where we talk about everything that's happening in the great world of cryptocurrency, from the fundamentals in the news to the technicals on the chart. We spend the time doing hours of research so that you all don't have to. And we are back in full roller coaster effect in these crypto markets. We're going up, we're going down, we're getting a lot of volatility. And there is certainly a lot happening in the news. Also, you know, one of the things that I just want to kind of precurse before we begin here, TiVo, is we saw something happen at the end of last week, beginning of this week, that we have never, ever seen in the crypto markets before. And I've been ranting and raving, wanting to see this. And man, I'm just so excited to be able to talk about it in today's episode. So make sure you stick around for the full one, everyone. There's a lot of cool stuff that we're going to talk about here. But TiVo, I mean, man, how are you feeling in all of this volatility? It's actionable.
Yeah, no, it's actionable, and it's now's a good time with the macro, like we always talk about, and the price action of being, you know, a little down, a little range bound. Is that, you know, if you go back and you look, sure, maybe 1 month we're down 12%, but look back 6 months ago, you know, we're up 70%. And, you know, before you get to that face ripping rally, you know, the price on November 30th was the same that it was January 23rd. So that was 2 months of, you know, basically no price action with a range bound. And so it seems like hopefully we're back in one of those of just kind of coiling up, and, you know, the hype has definitely died down for the people not in the space as much. But, you know, sometimes that's needed, right? The fear greed index is starting to come down from greed where it was, and, you know, just part of the cycle.
Yeah, I mean, let's not beat around the bush. I mean, Bitcoin saw this dump from 67K down to 56K, then from 56K back up to, I mean, what was it? 65, almost 66K. I mean, these are $10,000 moves in either direction that seems like it's happening almost every other week. And we come in on 1 week, we're like, we're up. The next week we come back, we're down, we're up, we're down. And, you know, we are on this roller coaster. And as we're going to show on the charts in just a second here, the chart looks like a roller coaster. However, we are finding support. The dips are being bought up. And you almost get the sense that there's starting to become a little bit of sellers panicking, right? I think that they're starting to get exhausted. And we're going to explain why that is the case, or why that could be the case. I'm not saying we're completely out of the woods yet, but for everyone who wants to follow along, if you want to look at the charts, make sure you go over to the YouTube channel. It's the Crypto 101 Podcast. And again, you can check that out on YouTube. And over there, we're going to get all the images, all the graphics that we're going to be referencing on the screen.
And as always, the link is in the description below. And we had a couple commenters we wanted to shout out. So that's what we said, you know, on YouTube and socials. We got some people saying some nice things. We got Kevin Sheehan, another great podcast, boys. Our boy Barnaldo, 2010. You guys are awesome. He's out of San Diego as well, just like some of our other colleagues. So thank you guys for the kind comments. We've had some new some reviews on Apple Pods and Spotify. So we appreciate those. Keep coming them in. And we'll keep delivering some fun weekly episodes to bring you guys some value.
Yeah, absolutely. And we want to shout out all the people who support us and drop new reviews and new comments and all this stuff. So we're going to make this a normal part of our intro. So if you go in there, you leave a comment on this video, you leave a review on the podcast, whether it's on Apple or Spotify or Audible or wherever it may be, we want to give you a shout out. So thanks for all the support for everyone that is there. And without further ado, let's go ahead and throw up the screen share over here on Bitcoin.
Have you ever wanted to trade Bitcoin but haven't dared tried? With Plus 500 Futures, you can trade crypto without the hassle of opening a wallet. With just a few clicks, you can register and start practicing with their free and unlimited demo. See a trading opportunity? You'll be able to trade in just two clicks. Feel ready? You can move to real money with as little as $100 once your account is approved. And the great thing is that in addition to crypto, Plus 500 gives you access to a wide range of instruments like the S&P 500, NASDAQ, gas, and much more. Explore equity indices like energy, metals, Forex, and beyond. With a simple and intuitive platform, you can trade anytime, anywhere. Experience the fast, accessible futures trading you've been waiting for with Plus 500. With over 20 years of experience, Plus 500 is your gateway to the markets. Visit us.plus500.com to learn more. Trading in futures involves risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone. Not all applicants will qualify, and this is not personal financial advice. Plus 500, it's trading with a plus.
So we can really see what we have been referencing. So to kind of kick us off over here to start things off, Bitcoin, again, with this bounce, I think this caught a lot of people by surprise. We went from 56K all the way back up to 65K. Now we're on the way back down over here. And it has a lot of people asking, like, why is this the case? Well, number one, this is the same resistance level that we've been mentioning. It's the same one that we've brought up before, saying, hey, Bitcoin has two primary resistance levels. Primary resistance level number one is the 50-day moving averages. Also, I think you could factor a little bit of the 20-day moving average in there, but the 50-day moving average is the significant one to pay attention to here, not just on Bitcoin's chart, but on most of the mainstream large cap well-performing altcoins. So Bitcoin, Ethereum, Solana, like a lot of these other charts, keep an eye on that 50-day moving average, which is this magenta colored line over here. Resistance number two, the all-time highs, right around the low end of the $70,000 range, right up here. We can see that there's a slight falling level of resistance over here. It's acted as a major resistance point, not once, not twice, but actually three times. And I do think we're going to inevitably retest this area at the low 70s as the next major point of resistance. But before we get through that, we have to get through the 50-day moving average. And so ever since Bitcoin has broken down over here, it turned this area of support into a resistance, as we can see by rejection number one. That was bad. Rejection number one, rejection number two, and rejection number three happening right around 66,000, 67,000, and 65,000 respectively. Now, with each one of these rejections, it's caused Bitcoin to go to a new local low. The first time we saw Bitcoin fall down to around 59, the second time we saw it fall down to around 56. Now we're rejecting it for the third time, and it has a lot of people wondering, does this mean that we could go back down towards maybe 57, 56? I mean, heck, maybe even a little bit lower, like $55,000 or $54,000. And the answer here is I still think it's on the table. Now, am I favoring the bulls? Am I selling everything off? Am I shorting the market? And the answer there is absolutely not. I still think that shorting the market at this point in time is a really silly decision, especially when a lot of altcoins are still down 20 to 40% from their highs, especially when Bitcoin's down 16%, which could likely be 20% in coming days. That's not a spot where I want to short the market. Again, when we see a double digit retracement inside of an overall uptrend, as we kind of zoom out and look at, I look at the pullbacks as arguably the best areas to accumulate. And so we've kind of shown this chart before, but again, I just really want to beat this point home. We've seen it happen over here and over here and over here and over here. And at all these points, I'm sure there was people saying, oh, the market's down double digits. Now's my time to short. And all of them would have gotten wrecked. And so rather than looking at the overall uptrend of this market and saying, man, I want to short, this is an area where I say, hey, when there is a dip, I'm actually more inclined to want to long because these are arguably some of the best buying opportunities out there. And so as bullish as I am about like the mid and the long term and all this stuff, I do think the short term, it's still too early to say if we're completely out of the tunnel yet, if we're completely out of bearish territory yet. Now, I've said this before and I'll say it again. I think we could easily have maybe a month or two of chop around or after the time of the halving. And we're not even a month out of the halving yet. And so I think that we could continue to kind of chop around here. I still think it's completely possible for Bitcoin to still test around the low 50s, high 40s, and that be like the ultimate bottom. But again, it's not something that I'm betting on. It's not something that I'm shorting to get down there. If we do get down there, I'm absolutely buying the dip. I'm absolutely getting long. However, I'm not like selling off all my crypto assets and wanting the market to go down there because I think I'm still fighting the trend at that point. So it's at areas like these where I look at resistance and I go, well, you know, maybe I don't want to be buying at the 50-day moving average. Maybe I want to let this thing kind of pivot a little bit and get some, you know, get its feet underneath itself. And once it proves to me that it has some sort of confirmation of a bottom or of a bounce or of a support area, that's where I'm going to get a lot more interested in jumping into more on-risk positions. But at the time being, I'm kind of looking at some of the more safer plays, things like Bitcoin, things like Ethereum, things like Solana, and there's a few others out there as well that I'm looking at over here. So going into the same theme of on Ethereum, rather, what we're seeing over here is that Ethereum actually has a nice little falling channel otherwise known as a bull flag. And so just like Bitcoin was using the 50-day moving average as a point of resistance, Ethereum has as well. And so we can see the first point of resistance was, or rather the first touch, was right after the breakdown of the 50 here. Again, we can see that it was a very nice support area. And then as soon as we bounced off of this and broke it, it was what we like to call a break, hook, and go. Because we are rejecting an area that used to be support. We used to bounce off this area. Now we're selling off of it. And so we can see the breakdown and the immediate turn of resistance over here. A little bit of a fake out. But that's still just kind of been the trend. So we see the rejection of the 50 here and here and here. Most recently, right around $3,200. And now it's kind of falling back down to this big support basin that it has at around $2,800 for Ethereum. Now, again, I still think it's on the table for Ethereum to touch its 200-day moving average. It could come back down to the bottom of this channel. It could touch this. It would be a beautiful longing opportunity, in my opinion. In fact, it's one of those areas, it's one of those zones that I'm really eager to, and I really do hope it hits, because again, I think it would just be such a fantastic buy the dip long opportunity that I'm almost wanting to see it. But if not, you know, hey, I'm prepared, I'm ready for it. But I think it would be a cool area to kind of accumulate on the dip a little bit more. The other metrics that people kind of have their eyes on up here are Bitcoin dominance. Again, people, really everyone's waiting for altcoin season at this point. They're desperately wanting it. People want the gains. They're hungry for it. I get it. In fact, we just wrote a whole newsletter on altcoin season and everything that you need to know about it. If you're a part of Crypt Nation, then you've probably already read through that thing. But I don't think it's too far off. I still think it's too early to say if it's here yet. We haven't fully seen this pivot of Bitcoin dominance. I mean, we can see this chart with all the different retracements. But overall, again, Bitcoin dominance trend is up. And in order to have a full-fledged alt season, we need to see this thing reverse. We need to see Bitcoin dominance go down. We need to see the majority of the altcoin market outperforming Bitcoin. And one of the best ways to just kind of look and see what's happening at the altcoin market or in the altcoin market is to go to TradingView and look at the Total 2 chart. You know, it's the physical representation of all altcoins or every crypto, essentially excluding Bitcoin. And so this thing's still relatively high. It's kind of consolidating in a little bit of a range over here. But once again, it's also seeing the 50-day moving average or this little magenta colored line as an area of resistance. And so that's why when we kind of bring up all these charts, we say, hey, look at the 50-day moving average. It's the same scenario for Solana here. On Solana's chart, you know, we bounced off this area once, twice. We kind of came over here three times. Now we're consolidating below it and using it as a resistance as well. So for a lot of those more mainstream, major or large cap cryptocurrency projects, if you aren't looking at the 50-day moving average or the 20 or the 200, maybe consider throwing them on your chart, taking a look at them, pulling up a TradingView application and looking into them yourselves, because I do think it's definitely some useful information. So before we go too much deeper, I want to pass it off to TiVo. And I mean, TiVo, there's a lot going on here. I don't know if you had any thoughts to kind of take away.
Yeah, I'm always, I feel like the philosopher of this show. You're in the grounds and the technicals, and I'm always trying to think things differently, right? So whether I see it on social media or maybe my own little thought processes, what can we look at and think differently? Like what might happen that people might not see coming? And I wonder if we can keep this, you know, 60 to 70,000 range bound. Like you said, if we don't retest the 200-day moving average and the market stays secure, And I'd love to know your thoughts on it. I wonder if maybe alt season could start in a sense, maybe before people think, because right now they're like, oh, we got to all-time highs and it didn't happen yet. It'll happen when we hit 100K. Everything's going to go crazy when we hit 100K. And so people are kind of waiting. And like you said, probably got some shakeout from the recent downturn of 30 to 40% down on altcoins. So I wonder if the market stays kind of strong in this upward range bound near all-time highs, if kind of maybe altcoin season could start earlier than people think, maybe out of nowhere and get people kind of caught off sides a little bit.
Yeah, that's typically the way that it works, right? It happens when people least expect it, when the masses and all the retail traders are saying, hey, something's going to happen one way. It typically happens the other. So I wouldn't be surprised if it happens sooner rather than later. I think as long as we keep our eyes on a couple of those metrics, especially Bitcoin dominance, we're going to have a decent understanding of when it's likely to occur and what that reversal could look like. And so I'm watching it closely. I feel like every single day I'm opening up my charts, and one of the first things I look at is like, you know, what's Bitcoin dominance doing? Is altcoin season here yet? I'm almost like drooling at the mouth waiting for it. I think a lot of crypto investors are. But no, you know, all jokes aside, I don't think it's too far out there, which is good. So, you know, one of the other things that stood out to me, and again, I referenced this at the beginning of the show, was something that's never happened in the crypto markets before. And people probably heard that and they were like, what could this be? Just tell us already. And I'll tell you what it is. In fact, I'm going to do you one better. I'm going to show you a chart of this. So for the first time ever in crypto history, Grayscale had positive ETF flows. I repeat, Grayscale had positive ETF flows. What does this mean? Well, they had more inflows than outflows. If you've been following this show for the last couple of months, we have been ranting and raving and just covering everything that's been happening with GBTC and Grayscale. Because for a while here, and I'm going to really try to zoom in on this thing. For a while here, I mean, look at all these outflows. There was just all this like pink, magenta, reddish color over here. That's all Grayscale outflows every single day. I think it was like a 76-day dry streak or a 2 to 3 month dry streak of just nothing but hundreds of millions of dollars a day. It equated to being billions and billions of dollars over this entire period of outflows. And so this streak ended last Friday. We can see it right here on the chart on the right-hand side over here. It ended. The selling pressure started kind of dissipating and boom, the inflows hit. And so if we go and we look, GBTC had 63 million in inflows on Friday. And then yesterday, or rather on Monday, they had another that's Fidelity. GBTC over here with 4 million. So overall, about 70 million in inflows over the course of last Friday and this Monday. Now, today we're seeing a little bit more outflows from GBTC. Nothing crazy. We saw it yesterday at around $28 million. However, this is one of those things that we brought up weeks ago. We said, hey, Grayscale cannot keep doing this forever. We're very vocal about this, saying, hey, Grayscale cannot keep up this kind of selling pressure. They're already starting to slow down. And when this does slow down and when they pivot, it will be a catalyst for Bitcoin performing again. And that's what we saw off the bounce of 56K back up to 65K was the inflows coming in. People remember, people saw this and they used it as a catalyst back to the upside. Well, what do we see yesterday? Well, yesterday the selling starts happening again. I would imagine a little bit today as well. Prices are falling. But what we're seeing is that Grayscale is not selling off, you know, $400, $500, $600 million of Bitcoin a day anymore. And that's ultimately a really positive catalyst for the entire crypto market, because this is hundreds of millions of dollars of selling pressure that isn't there anymore. And it allows the bulls to come in and really drive prices back up. And the last time that we saw this was back towards the end of January, beginning of February. And we all remember what happened to the price of Bitcoin after that. I mean, it just went on a freaking tear to the upside. And I really do think that we are in the preparation phase before our next leg up over here. Now, again, is it going to be tomorrow? You know, probably not. I think, again, we might have a little bit of time beforehand, but I think that we are in that preparation phase as we kind of go through this little consolidation period. We're getting chopped up, but I do think the ultimate next leg up is coming. And this is just one of those other signs of it, TiVo. I mean, when we look at this, this is something that we have been just, again, waiting for so long. I know people are going to hear this. They're going to read about it. They're going to see the chart, and they're going to be happy about it. So the day has finally come, and certainly some good news from that sector.
Yeah, we're making memes of our guy over. I forget what's his name, the CEO of Grayscale.
Oh,
Barry? Is it Barry?
Yeah, I think it was Barry Silver.
Yeah, so we were like, you know, what have you done? You became what you swore to protect us from. So yeah, glad to see him in the green, and you know, open invite to come on the show whenever he wants. We want to get him back on the bull train heading upwards. So good to see that, you know, positive, you know, just positive news. You got to find, you got to look for the diamonds in the rough sometimes in the range or downward bound. And this is definitely one of those that maybe the average person might not notice on, you know, just in general on the timeline or Twitter or whatnot. But it is a big deal for it to turn around like that, because we have been covering it for months.
Yeah. And on that same kind of theme, I don't know if you saw this, but South Korea is actually moving towards Bitcoin ETFs next, Tebow, which is a cool thing. I think it kind of fits into that theme of global adoption. You know, originally we were covering and saying, hey, Canada has them. Then the United States started having them. And now, you know, we've seen the Hong Kong ones. Now we're seeing some come out of Korea. And it just goes into this theme of this is truly a global phenomenon that's happening everywhere. Doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter where you are. Every country around the world has begun to adopt and become interested in this stuff. And there's just proof of it. I think the ETFs are the most clear-cut sign proof that the TradFi, the traditional financial institutions, are seeing this train, and they know that they're going to get left behind if they don't jump on. And so that's why we're seeing all these ETFs come out. They know that there's a lot of money in it. They know that there's a lot of interest and upside. Otherwise, all these TradFi players wouldn't be jumping in the first place. You don't see them going out and creating these like little kid ETFs. No, they're after the big money. These are the big fish. And they're not interested in any kind of small fry, small talk stuff. So, yeah, I mean, just more adoption happening on the ETF front. I don't think that they're like officially launched or approved or anything like that. It's more so them just saying, hey, we want these things. We're going to be taking the steps in that right direction. And yeah. And on a final note of the ETFs, the Ethereum ETFs, something that I don't know if we talked about too much last week, but we've mentioned this before that they're probably not very likely to get approved by May or like by the summer. The dates for those are starting to already get pushed back for a few of them, from May to June to now July. And truth of the matter is, I think it's going to get pushed back even further than July. So as of right now, it looks like these Ethereum ETFs are going to be pushed back to July. However, truth be told here, I think it's going to go even further than that. I wouldn't be surprised if we go from July to August to September, October, and so on. So time will tell. Again, I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's probably even a better thing. And I think we had a, who was it? I think it was Matt Hogan, or maybe it was James Seyfarth, who was saying it's actually a good thing if we push these things back a little bit and give them a little bit of time to breathe. And I almost, at first I was like, I don't understand that. Now it makes a little bit more sense. So I'm fine with this, but just a little bit of an FYI, little news update for everyone out there who's asking and wondering about these Ethereum ETFs. They're probably going to be delayed just a little bit longer. Now, I still think they're coming. You know, maybe it's towards the end of this year, maybe it's next year. I don't think it's a matter of when. I don't think it's a matter of if. I think it's a matter of when. And so that when is still very much up in the air. There hasn't been too much back and forth between these companies and the SEC about them. But speaking of the SEC, we have all sorts of stuff to talk about in regards to that. And so, Tiva, I want to hand it off to you. I don't even know where to start with this stuff.
I know. It's sad. I mean, well, Gary Gensler is definitely the weasel of the week, if not the weasel of the year.
Weasel of the decade.
To build off your Ethereum, we don't have a clip of it, but he was on, this Squawk Box CNBC morning show yesterday, you know, just taking a ton of questions about the Ethereum ETF, crypto, and he just, all he does is he deflects. Like the SEC lands down these huge, you know, headline popping like anti-crypto things all the time, and then he just dodges the questions, and you know, people start breaking down what he says, and it's just half of it's like basically not true. He's like, I can't comment on this, I can't comment on that. And sure, there's some stuff like, especially like, for example, like a Coinbase, an ongoing legal court case. Maybe you can't comment on that, but like the decisions of why the SEC is going after, you know, not allowing the ETFs, like that stuff he can comment on. So a lot of stuff this guy just deflects. And I'm going to play a clip here, basically from, you know, another branch of the government that is basically calling out the SEC, saying that they're just, all they are is pageantry. So this clip's basically breaking down, you know, parts of the government that are trying to be pro crypto and get some regulation, at least just get discussion going on having, you know, some conversations around being pro digital assets. And every time that this committee has a scheduled meeting or an announcement, the SEC immediately, either that day of, like before they meet or right after they meet, the SEC posts some anti-crypto thing or some crypto legislation. So we'll play that clip for you right here.
Finally, I want to raise an alarming issue that I think needs further attention. The timing of various actions by the SEC while Congress is seeking to establish a regulatory framework on digital assets. To name a few, January 12, 2023, this committee announces the formation of the Digital Assets Financial Technology and Inclusion Subcommittee. It was subsequently announced that the SEC pursued enforcement actions against two firms. March 9, 2023, the committee hosts its first hearing on the Biden administration's approach to digital assets. An hour before the hearing, you publish an op-ed in The Hill. April 27, 2023, the committee hosts another hearing on digital asset regulation. You tweet and quote office hours video on your view that most digital assets are securities. May 3, 2023, this committee and the House Agriculture Committee, led by my colleague Chairman Thompson, announce our first joint hearing on digital asset legislation, which is unprecedented. You published another office hours. I'm not one to connect dots, but it seems like you're actively trying to undermine the work of Congress. You must not impede our work to do our job, even though you won't do yours. I yield back.
So as you can see there, literally every time this committee is trying to, you know, move the ball forward just a little bit to get the conversation going, the SEC has to come out, and whether it's like some type of, you know, Wells notice or even just a stupid tweet of Gary Gensler's office hours. And I've literally tweeted about those videos so many times on our account and how just absolute cringy they are. Like, you literally are supposed to be working for the government, making laws, and like you're so self-seating that you need to sit down and make these office hour videos. Like, you like to go in front of a green screen and make some content and have hire an editor to think that you look cool. Like, it's just so virtue signaling of like, look at me, I'm working and I'm doing my job, that it bothers me that our tax dollars actually pay for those type of videos to go out and just spread, like, basically your propaganda of whatever side that you're on for the SEC. Like, this Gary Gensler guy, he's so cringy to me, and he just kind of makes me sick. And then on top of that, he issued a Wells notice for Robinhood this week, literally 48 earnings before their earnings call. Like,
but you've been bullish on them ever since we had them on the podcast.
It's, yeah, personal. Yes, it's a personal attack on me now. Like, you're trying to say that you're protecting investors. Like, no, there's people that believe in this company and believe in the innovations that they're doing.
It's all your tweets.
And you're now attacking individual investors that have some of their life savings tied up in what, yeah, Robinhood's going to talk about today at 4 p.m. after the bell. Like, Mr. Gary Gensler is an absolute weasel. He's a pigeon. What would this guy do if he didn't have Liz Warren to loop a leash around his neck and walk him down the aisles of Congress? Like, it's absolutely disgusting that this guy thinks he can just pick and choose who he wants to go to battle with, and then claim you can do that, but at least be real. Don't say that you're trying to protect the individual investors when you're actually tying a noose around them and kicking the stool out from underneath them. Like, you're just firing these blanks for headlines. Like, you have the Coinbase Wells notice compared to the SEC Wells notice for Robinhood literally cites that different projects are securities. So if you're going to say that Coinbase and Maddox is security, but then you don't mention it for Robinhood when they're also selling Maddox or Sol, pick whatever one you want. Like, the two Wells notices don't even equate to the one for Coinbase versus Robinhood. So it's like, at least put some thought into what you're doing. Like, try to make it look like you're actually working for the people and like you actually have a plan. Like, screw working for the people. Like, try to make it seamless that, like, hey, this compares to that. It's like, these, you're comparing seafood to steak. It's like, what's going on over at the SEC? It's embarrassing. And again, like, he's an actual pigeon. He's a pigeon.
The thing that makes it worse is that when you look at what they're doing, like, they're the ones who approve companies to go public. They approved Robinhood to go public. They approved Coinbase to go public. Like, they are the SEC. They are the Securities and Exchange Commission. And without them, we wouldn't have a publicly traded Robinhood. We wouldn't have a publicly traded Coinbase. We wouldn't have a lot of these things that they approved. So how do they go after and sue companies for breaking whatever, for all these things, after approving the very concepts themselves. And so it's like, okay, well, did you not do your job in the first place and this go unnoticed and you're just now realizing that this is actually breaking laws? Or were they completely, what's the word? Were they being completely regulatory fine and then you're just making something up now? Because that's what I can't understand. I can't understand how the very institution that approved them to go public and to do all this stuff in the first place is now suing them, saying that there's all these issues. Like, it's either they messed up in the first place and they weren't doing their job to begin with and stuff has gone over their head, or it actually is completely regulatory compliant and they're just making stuff up. And so it's either, you know, either way, it looks bad for them. I don't think he understands, and this goes actually to prove that he just doesn't understand what he's working with here. And it's, I don't know, maybe it's just him being oblivious or ignorant or incredibly biased on one end or another, but it doesn't add up. And they keep losing these cases. That's the crazy thing, is they're trying to sue everyone and they just lose. Like, I don't know. I think he's hurting his reputation drastically more than he's helping it. And
like, a sane person would look at the situation and be like, okay, I was buying crypto on Coinbase back in 2017, 18. And Coinbase goes public in 2021. Same thing with Robinhood. You're buying crypto back in 2018 is when they first started launching crypto products. They go public in 2021 or 2020 as well. So, like, what's the difference between that? And then, like, okay, so we can, same thing with the Bitcoin ETF. Like, oh, we can trade futures, but we can't trade the actual spot. Like, that doesn't make sense either. And so, if you look at that from a 5,000 foot view, it's like your priorities aren't straight. So then who's in your pockets, and what is your actual game plan other than the fraud shield of protecting the little investor? Like, it's horseshit. It's absolute horseshit.
I don't think anyone, at least give us a good looking
human being to look at, like a strong woman or a guy who's got a comb over, like this bald. I'm gonna bleep that out. But god damn, he's such a weasel.
Yeah, I mean, we could rant about him forever, and I think it just comes down to no one on either side likes him anymore. Right? It doesn't matter if you're on the political side of left, right, up, down, sideways. Doesn't matter. No one likes him. I've never heard anyone on any kind of political spectrum be like, you know who I really hope just sticks around and continues to work in the finance sector? Gary Gensler. Man, I love that man. You never hear that. You hear that on every other kind of side of politics, but you will never hear those words get talked about in regards to Gary Gensler. And that's because he's just made enemies. He's made enemies of everyone. It's like, oh, you like TradFi? Sued. You like crypto? Sued. You like gains? Sued. You like being protected from your investments? I think I'm going to pass
on
that.
You know who he did like?
Who?
Sam Bankman-Fried.
They were actually kind of buddy-buddy.
Yeah. You can't make it up.
Yeah. It's craziness. But, you know, believe it or not, it gets crazier. We have another clip that we want to show all of you. I'll let TiVo do the introduction on this one, but it gets even better if you thought.
And it's a perfect segue, because this is another, like, the chair of the SEC. He's the leader. Like, the SEC is a big organization. I get that. But he is the leader. Like, it all flows up to him. And so here we have a clip of Biden's chief economist. So, you know, take out the word Biden, like whether you're left or right. This is the chief economist who's giving the president of the United States. Yeah, it doesn't matter who the president is. He's going to have a chief economist. And this person is the chief economist of our current administration. And we're going to play this clip of him describing how bonds work.
Like you said, they print the dollar. So why does the government even borrow?
Well, some of this stuff gets, some of the language that some of the language and concepts are just confusing. I mean, the government definitely prints money, and it definitely lends that money, which is why the government definitely prints money, and then it lends that money by selling bonds. Is that what they do? They sell bonds. right? Since they sell bonds and people buy the bonds and lend them the money. Yeah, so a lot of times, at least to my ear with MMT, the language and the concepts can be kind of unnecessarily confusing, but there is no question that the government prints money and then it uses that money to, I can't really talk, I don't get it. I don't know what they're talking about. Like, cause it's like the government clearly prints money. It does it all the time and it clearly borrows. Otherwise we wouldn't be having this debt and deficit conversation. So I don't think there's anything confusing there.
So, again, I'm not saying that I could sit in front of a camera and answer the question perfectly either, but if you're the chief economist of the United States of America, one would think that you would have a better answer. And I think this is a broader, you know, question around why are people excited about Bitcoin and other options of a digital asset class? This is part of it, is we have people leading us that really might not know how the system works. And even if they do know how the system works, you can kind of peel back the onion a little bit and be like, okay, maybe there's some holes in this Swiss cheese here that might be a little big not to, you know, take other avenues of action.
Yeah, I mean, all he had to do is give the extremely simple answer and say it stimulates the economy. That's all. He started trying to go into bonds and all these other crazy things. He just has to say it stimulates the world economy, both domestically and foreign, and he could have just left it at that. And, you know, maybe dive into some other little things. But no, I mean, if you can't even answer that as the chief economist of the United States, it makes me concerned. I mean, that'd be like me getting on here and TiVo, you being like, hey, Brendan, like, what's happening with Bitcoin? You know, how is crypto different from stocks? And I'd be like, well, you know, crypto is different from stocks because they both trade and they trade because they trade. And you know, and I just be fumbling over my words. Like, you have to hold these people to a higher standard. You really do. If you have the chief economist of the United States asking and not being able to explain why the United States borrows and does other things, it's a little bit of a red flag in my opinion. So, you know, when we bring all this up and we look at the global financial structure of the world, and as crazy as this gets, as chaotic as these episodes do get, there's an answer to a lot of this stuff. And it's crypto and blockchain tech. Now, I'm not saying that it's the answer to every financial issue that we have today. I'm not saying that we're all going to be off-grid on blockchains. Crypto's the one world currency. It's happening tomorrow. I'm not saying anything like that. You know, I love crypto. I'm not that much of an extremist. But a lot of these issues and problems and stuff that we talk about today, it can be solved with blockchain technology. And there is this movement that is slowly making its way through of replacing the middleman, replacing the corruption, replacing the bias. And crypto and blockchain tech is just one way that we can do that. And so one industry at a time is getting, you know, interrupted. It's working its way in here. It doesn't matter if it is money transfers or cloud storage or gaming or artificial intelligence or tokenization of real world assets. All these different sectors are starting to see the benefits of crypto tech, and it's coming. You know, there is a solution out there. And so that's the good news. We talk about this and sometimes we like to reference the problems that are happening in TradFi and say, hey, there's actually a solution. As crazy as it gets, as chaotic as it gets, there truly is a solution to a lot of this stuff. And ultimately, even in light of all this, there's going to be a brighter tomorrow. We look at the crypto markets here and it still is very optimistic. And a lot of this FUD and craziness and stuff that happens, it actually gives us the opportunity to accumulate the dip when we're not at all-time highs, when we're not at $74,000 anymore on Bitcoin, you know, when Ethereum's not at $5,000 like it was previously, we get to buy these things at a discount because as they progress, as time goes on, as Bitcoin's inflation rate shrinks, as Ethereum continues to be a deflationary asset, actually, there's upside opportunity here. And more people and developers and financial institutions are building on this stuff. We've already seen BlackRock. We've seen Bank of America show interest. We've seen Citi show interest. The list goes on, you know, BNY Mellon, et cetera. And so, you know, keep the head lifted high here because there is a lot of cool stuff on the horizon.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a fun, I mean, at the end of the day, it's also just a fun space to be involved. Like, crypto Twitter's fun. This podcast is fun. Our community's fun. And it gives you a different view of the economic world, of kind of basically just like what you just described. And, you know, you never go all in on anything, you know, at least responsibly is something that you wouldn't do. But being able to educate yourself on different sides of how people see the economic world or any topic of the world is definitely beneficial to probably broadening your horizons and thoughts as a human being. So, you know, I think that being involved in this space can definitely help educate you and grow, you know, beyond just maybe your financial means, maybe just your theory and approach to life as well.
Agreed. Well, I think that's going to bring us to the end of this episode. Well, everyone, thank you all for tuning in. An action-packed one we had today. Everything that's happening from the price movements of Bitcoin to the price movements of altcoins, these new ETF information, and even all the stuff that's happening in the world of TradFi, we're going to make sure that we keep you posted over here. So once again, if you like the content that we make, consider hitting that like and that subscribe button. Leave us a comment, leave us a review. We love hearing from all of you. And again, if you want to stay up to date on everything that's happening in the world of crypto, again, it doesn't matter if it's the news or the charts or whatever it may be. We're a little bit biased over here, but man, we think this is the best place and the best way to do it. So thank you all for watching, and we're going to see all of you at the same time, same place next week.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.